Good morning. This is House Call, and this is Dr. Naeem Rahim today because my brother's missing. I wonder why. He's always here. He's not here today. And interestingly, he has a good reason, although I do not like excuses because myself, I'm probably hardly ever late. stop it. He's up on a mountain in Nepal, climbing for humanity. At this point, I think he's up to 18,000 feet.
Wow.
It's interesting, when I FaceTimed with him the other day, he didn't look like a popsicle yet. So it must be, he must be doing something there to keep himself warm. Well, we have an excellent show today about women health. So 51% of our population is being represented today. Just in this show, we have a wonderful guest today, Monica Nealis. Monica,
hi, everybody. Good morning.
Monica, you are a physician assistant, and interestingly, you are also a graduate of Idaho State University from the first batch of the PS school.
Yes, I am. Oh. Way back when, almost 22 years ago, we were the guinea pigs.
That's right. So they must have learned something good, because this is one of the best PS schools in the country at this point.
This is an amazing school. They put out so many PAs that are so smart. Everybody gets a little nervous sometimes when they hear the word PA, mid-level provider.
I actually don't like the word mid-level.
I don't mind it. It's okay. I'm not a doctor, and I don't plan to be a doctor.
But I don't know if I'm high level.
Oh,
there's always a mid for somebody, right? So maybe we need to figure out some way. You are a PA, a physician assistant.
Yes.
You went to school for that for a significant amount of years, and then you have been practicing in Idaho Falls. Born and raised in Idaho Falls.
Born and raised in Idaho Falls.
And have you ever been outside Idaho at all? There's a whole world outside. Have you seen it?
Yes, I've seen some of it. Not all of it, but I have seen some. I love to travel, yes.
So it must be feeling good to be at Idaho State University, your alma mater.
This is my alma mater, yes, and I love it. It is awesome being back on campus. My daughter is going here now.
Oh, wow.
She's enjoying it. However, she's not medical. She's in the English program and
smart
literature.
Girl.
Oh yes, very smart. That's kind of a nerd, but I love her.
That's good. Today we are going to talk about women's health, and you have been practicing in this field of women's health for a long, long time, and we'll try to learn some from your experience of our local communities and how women get the healthcare in Idaho, and maybe that give us a little sampling of what women are facing from the healthcare needs point of view in the rest of the country.
Perfect.
Monica, what to you is the big bad wolf that is out there that is affecting women's health needs at this point?
Health needs is going to be the access to health care.
Which holds true for both men and women.
Absolutely. A lot of times women won't speak what their problems are when they come to their health care provider. If they don't feel comfortable, they won't bring up the topics such as incontinence, low libido, sexual issues, problems. Breast and vagina has always kind of been a voodoo word in women.
I know. It is like you're taking it to DEFCON level already. You said all those words on public radio. But it is a reality, isn't it?
It is. It's very much a reality.
And is it our culture in the country, or in the region, or where we
in
live?
In this region, I think it's the culture. I love my mother to death, but I had to learn everything from my friends.
Right.
She wasn't going to tell me, and to this day, she's kind of a little nervous about what I do and that what I talk to women about. But it's okay, and we have to kind of break that stigma for women. It is okay to talk about issues and problems.
You know, I was that kind of a friend, actually, and a lot of people learn from me a lot of that stuff, and especially my brother. I think everything he knows, he learned from me. But he was very protected. It wasn't the fault of my parents. Mm. About women not seeking help or not able to seek that help, does that affect their health care overall? Do you notice that they come in too late?
Yes, they come in way too late. Even just with depression, anxiety, women typically are superwoman. I can deal with it all. I can have a family and I can have children and I can have religious issues and I can take care of everything and my neighbor and their dog. And by the time they come in to see me, they realize I don't know how to say no very well. And I don't know how to limit myself. And I don't know when to ask for help. And typically they come in and they have full-blown problems versus just minor ones that we need to just a little glitch in their system we need to fix.
So they don't show up for their 5,000-mile services. They just show up when the transmission is out.
Exactly. Women don't like the annual exam. No disrespect. Who does? But it's very good. There's a lot of parts of a woman that you just can't see easily without a mirror or becoming a contortionist. And coming in for that, as you put it, checkup,
right.
It makes a big difference. Heart, lungs, breast, pelvic. Some women, you know, feel, oh, I just have some bellyache because of the tacos I ate last night. Well, after, you know, 2 months of thinking it's just dinner last night, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's GI. Maybe it's ovarian.
Right. And in support of my male friends and my gender, I would say, you know, men in this town also don't do that much. There are farmers and hardworking blue-collar people, and some don't have insurance, and some have never seen a physician because they don't want to. Yep. And seems like this culture permeates through this tough people's lives. They just put themselves
last.
Absolutely. On the back burner.
Always on the back burner.
And
you can't take care of your family and your friends unless you take care of yourself first. And
right.
Trying to get that out, that message out, it's coming around. It's slow.
It's kind of like I tell them about the example of an airplane. You know, they always tell you, put the mask on yourself first, dummy. Then put it on somebody else. Don't start going up and down the aisle putting masks on people if you don't have a mask on, right?
Exactly.
And it is what it is. So what are the issues that women commonly present with in your practice?
I have depression is a big deal.
Depression.
Depression is a big deal.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
How does it present in women, depression?
Depression can
because they don't probably just show up, say,
I'm
you
depressed.
Know, I'm depressed.
No.
Because women are not supposed to say those things, right, in the world.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
too tough.
Oh, yeah.
And how does that present, depression?
They typically show up in the office, and we'll start talking, and then something will catch my interest in what they're saying of they've got so much on their plate, or all of a sudden she starts becoming a little tearful, or she starts becoming very angry with me in certain questions that I ask. Once I can kind of break through that barrier, tears is the biggest issue. And women say that, I just don't even know why I'm crying, but I just want to go in my room, lock the door, and have an hour just to myself just to cry. Or I have women who say, I don't even want to go outside anymore. I don't even want to engage with my family. I just want to be alone. Then I have other patients who come in and say, I'm a little concerned because I see people in the parking lot and I want to run them over. Mm. And so each woman has a different way of showing their depression and anxiety. Once they understand it's okay to talk about it and that, I mean, statistically wise, it's probably 70-80% of the women out there at one point or another have been treated for depression or anxiety or have a family member that it's kind of inherited in their genes, that being overwhelmed, they don't deal well with stress.
Yeah. I don't know if they deal well with the stress or not, but I would say there's a lot of stress being put on in today's culture on both men and women and even young people. And I don't know even growing up, we were ever prepared to take that kind of stress, you know?
Oh, very hard to be.
There was a generation before us of the Great Depression and then the World War II that had, if you talk to them, they say, this is easy as compared to. But for every generation, they have to deal with their issues, and their issues are big, and they're not small, right?
No.
And today, do you think women have to be, you know, as a man, my wife is going to school. She's been wonderful. Has, you know, we got married when we were young, and she also an ISU student, and you know, she would be at home and taking care of these children until she went recently to the master's program. And I would always think that she's sitting at home while I'm at work, and I wonder how her day goes. And there was a day when I had to do her day job. And I tell you, it's not easy.
No.
I felt like a taxi driver, first of all, because I was picking and dropping all day long. And I was doing these chores, which were just immense. And that burden of common work and things that just don't fall the way it's supposed to, do you think that takes a toll and there's nobody to talk to about it?
Yes. Well, and women who are homemakers, and thank goodness for every one of them, it's hard not to have that adult conversation. And children are wonderful, but sometimes adults need adult conversation and getting out into the world and knowing what's going on and what are my other friends doing, and knowing that, you know, we always have the Partridge Family and the Brady Bunch of their families are so wonderful. Well, when you really talk to your friends and you get down to the nitty gritty, nobody's perfect.
Right.
But it's hard to not hold that persona for your neighbors.
And it.
Exactly.
Right. So depression being one of those things, are there therapies out there that you approach, or are there medications, or do you just jump to the medications, or what do you do?
A little bit of both. I try to talk to the patients, explain that, you know, it really is natural. It is one of those things that people just, after a while, you can only take so much and you have your enough point.
Right.
I do counseling, try to talk to patients. I don't personally do the counseling. I try to get patients into counseling.
Right.
Counseling itself has that stigma of voodoo. You should not do that. You know, then you're really screwed up. But you're not. And counselors have a great way of putting a different spin on things and having you learn different techniques with breathing and visualization and helping you work through problems like that. Medication also has a great part in the treatment of depression, and a lot of patients, it takes both.
And it helps, of course, to a great extent.
It's
like if you have a bleeding limb, you don't just leave it there and say, you know what, it's going to just get better. It's like a disease, right? It is a disease. I shouldn't say it's like a disease. It is a disease that needs to be treated. So, you know, we're going to take a quick break at this moment. And when we come back, we'll take some phone calls as well. Our phone number is 208-282-4555. Monica Niels. You've been doing great so far.
Thank you. This
I don't
is
even
awesome.
Miss my brother.
Oh, great. I'm prettier than him.
Yeah, sure.
Funding for KISU comes from the ISU Hearing Clinic on Memorial Drive in Pocatello. A person needs to listen to their body and pay attention to what isn't being heard. Search ISU Audiology Clinic or call 208-282-3495. Appointments for all ages available Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
KISU is supported by the Idaho Humanities Council, sponsor of the Eastern Idaho Distinguished Humanities Lecture and Dinner, with best-selling historian Douglas Brinkley on the topic, American Moonshot, John F. Kennedy and the Great Space Race, April 26th at the Idaho Falls Shiloh Inn. Tickets at idahohumanities.org.
Doctor, my eye. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
That was a quick break, really. I mean, I barely did 30 push-ups. It's crazy. We're here together with Monica Nealis. My brother is up on a mountain somewhere in Nepal. For those of you who don't know, it's a country. He's out there climbing for humanity, so we all wish him the best of luck. Monica Nealis, PA, is our guest today, and we're talking about women's health. I actually sound like I should be on like public radio.
You have a very good voice.
You know what? You're absolutely right. My brother usually says that I have a face for radio.
Ooh.
He has never complimented me for my voice. But
it's very strong. It's nice.
Thank you. And so are you. You're awesome. So, Monica, tell me, now that we got that out of the way, before we went to on the break, we talked about depression and how depression presents differently in different people, and especially it's also sometimes gender specific. And there's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with seeking help or talking to your provider. Do you think women have barriers in talking to male physicians in today's culture and day and age about their depression and their issues?
Absolutely. Especially with the Tom Cruise issue. Tom Cruise says...
What did Tom Cruise say?
Oh, don't you remember?
No.
Oh,
he said a lot of crap.
Oh, yeah. His biggest issue was no medication is needed. You need to just be happy, get out there, exercise, and life is wonderful. And anybody who needed to go on medication was ridiculous. But it's not true. Women need to listen to their bodies. When you need help, you need to ask. I do think it is harder for some women to talk with men. Some men, no disrespect, such as yourself, you're a little intimidating.
Sure.
But if you can get past that intimidation and get down to your provider is still just a human.
Right.
And they probably have gone through much of the same things you have. But it's hard to get onto that same level as a patient.
Yeah, I would never claim that I would understand women. I don't think there's any man out there who understands women. And for those who think I'm intimidating, I can tell you I've got a mother who is has been the terror all my life. And I am fairly scared of her and respect her tremendously. We've got a caller online. We'll take that call in a second, and then we'll talk a little bit more about some other issues that women are facing.
Perfect.
Good morning. You're on house call.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple questions in regards to access to health care and women's health. Do you think that perhaps one of the difficulties that women face is the fact that their health or access to health is constantly on a chopping block? Whether we talk about access to childcare, birth control, contraceptives, sexual health, abortion, I feel that the narrative is always, it always comes back to eliminating that or making it more difficult for women to have access. And going on that note, I don't know if you guys noticed as practitioners that, you know, when women do come in and discuss their healthcare, that sometimes they're not taken as seriously. And then when you add, you know, the intersectionality of women of color, it becomes even more complicated. And I think there have been studies that show that women of color and minorities, when they come in and present, you know, issues about their health, they're not taken seriously at all. And so I wanted to know what your thought is, or if you face those things in Idaho. Thank you. And I can take the comments offline. Thank you.
Thank you. Monica, what do you think? Do you think you face, do you think women are on a chopping block when it comes to healthcare? Are there issues out there that legislators, lawmakers are not fully comprehending the issues from the perspective of women?
Yes. I also think that a lot of times we waste our efforts on silly changing all of the guidelines, and sometimes we just need to leave healthcare alone and let us take care of the patients and not always be so rigid in every guideline that we have out there. But yes, I do think there is an issue with minorities. I think just getting them in to the clinics and language barrier can be a big deal. And then the translation, if I have a gal in that I don't speak her language, having a translator, she may not give it to me in the same sense as the patient is.
Sure. Or how about even different races? Are different? I'm sure Idaho is a little bit homogenous, maybe you're not exposed to that, but do you get exposure like that in your practice?
Yes.
And is it? It's a whole different culture altogether,
right? It's a whole different culture.
Do you think there's any training on the level of practitioners to deal with different cultures at this point?
No, I don't, unfortunately. And I think that is a hard part because from Hispanics to African American, everybody has their own culture and what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable, just in all the realms of sexual practice, contraception, and I think it is hard to understand all of those, and it is hard for a patient to explain it to a provider that does not know that.
And also, women are also facing issues where lawmakers are making silly laws that have nothing to do with. I mean, you never have men getting their Viagra controlled by the Senate.
Exactly.
And we have the Senate or even local legislators sometimes are, controlling what can be given for birth control bills to women.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, and that's what I think the point the caller was trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
If you at this point already are facing issues of having women to talk about their stuff and talk about their depression and other things, and on top of it, they feel like the whole system is sometimes working against them. Whether it is or not, it's a whole new debate. But shouldn't we not be making it more difficult for people to feel isolated?
Very much. And I try not to in my practice, but I also say it is hard because everybody is coming from different backgrounds. Even just trying to get like the plan B.
Sure.
It's in certain areas, it's voodoo. You don't talk about it. And
is this the role of a physician or a physician providers who are involved to maybe raise the voice against it? And that's not maybe the question. The question is to make them comfortable, their patients, enough that they know that they can have conversations with you at any topic.
Yeah. And they still have
that. And nothing is voodoo when it comes to your provider.
And you need to be able to explain to the patient, you have all these different options. And that is the biggest issue, is you've got to be able to talk with the patients and let them know what their options are. And then the patient gets to make their
decision. Politics can stay at the door.
Politics stay at the door.
Let me quickly, because we've got a few minutes left, I want to talk about other healthcare needs that women have. And how about self breast exams and mammograms, stuff like that? Can you tell us about that?
I think I have a lot of patients that come in and tell me, oh, you do my breast exam once a year, and that's fine. And it's really not. Self-breast exams is a big deal. It's a big part. If you don't feel, you don't know, you can't find.
Right.
And
one should be able to judge their body better than anybody else.
Absolutely. I've had patients come in and say, my partner found lumps. And that's amazing. Good. Men are booby kind of men. Good. They're booby people.
That's right.
Women, we carry them around every day. You know, no disrespect. I don't want to go home and check it out. But that's good. You need to be able to have yourself or somebody else know what your breast feels like. Mammograms are absolutely a definite part. There are breast cancers out there, though, that mammograms do not find.
Right.
I myself had a mammogram done and 6 months later found my own lump. Mm. And it's one of those things you have to know your body.
But you cannot abandon it. Just because it's not 100% doesn't mean that you don't pursue it.
No.
Because there are steps after that.
Absolutely.
An MRI or an ultrasound. Anatomical types of women breasts can have different presentations.
Absolutely.
And different
the fibrocystic changes, the thicker breast tissue. Again, breast cancer is just from a mutation of the cells, the DNA of the cells. And if you have your mammogram and it was wonderful and it's perfect, that's great. But who's to say 2 months later down the road, something isn't mutating that cell?
And when does that start happening? When do women do their mammograms should be doing it?
We start doing a baseline at the age of 40.
Okay.
And then typically yearly until 60, yearly from then on. Some of the national organizations say every 3 years in your 40s, every 2 years in your 50s, and yearly at 60.
So 40s is a good start, but unless you have a family history.
Unless you have a family history, absolutely.
And if you have a family history, we start early.
We start 10 years prior
to your. So if you have a sibling, you have an aunt, mom who's had it.
They were diagnosed at
45.
Then we start
at 35.
Yep.
And is it a common issue, breast cancer?
Breast cancer is becoming more and more common. The problem I see is most of the new breast cancers are being diagnosed in women who do not have a family history.
Give me a rundown, we got 2 minutes, of other things that women should be looking at in their annual examinations or
heart disease is a big deal with women.
Sure.
The human papillomavirus.
HPV, for which there's a vaccination. People do get vaccinated for HPV. Don't listen to anybody else. Go get it.
Gardasil, go get it. Pap smears, pelvic exams, looking at ovaries. Oh, my goodness. An annual exam is absolutely needed. Every woman, every year,
should
go get
have
them.
It. Absolutely. There are ways for us to find and prevent things from happening. One should, if you don't show up, you're not going to get it. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong in being, how about younger people? Younger people should be doing it too. They shouldn't be waiting till 40, right? Every adult should be getting some annual exam.
And even children
should be getting.
21 is when we start doing annual exams on ladies.
Right. But when I meant annual examination, I meant seeing a physician.
Seeing a physician, absolutely.
All right. And Monica, in today's day and age, healthcare is available, but it's not prevalent. It's prevalent, but it's not available because of lack of different resources. There are not enough providers. Mm-hmm. Idaho is number 49. And I have learned that the nurse practitioners, the PAs, and physicians, they all do a great job. Mm-hmm. Those who are out there in this world still practicing primary care are the warriors, because that is a field which is tough. It does not reimburse well. It is hard, painstaking. Not everybody tends to become a specialist. So I thank you all for doing your role in bringing healthcare to all of us.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on today.
Monica, where do you practice, by the way? You make me want to be part of of your plan. So where do you practice? Can people get to see you?
I practice at Comprehensive Primary Care and Wellness Center.
Okay.
We have multiple providers there. Our number is 715-9990. Call today and we'll get you in.
715-9990. You know what? You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.